This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints, Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news. It doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
It is time to wake up. On this show, we cover the stories the mainstream media won't touch. Live from the Rocky Mountains, welcome to Redacted with Natalie and Clayton Morris. Are you ready? Let's get uncomfortable. Welcome, everybody. Welcome into the show. Good to see all of you guys here on this Tuesday. We have a busy show for you. We're going to talk about the scuttled peace plans. Zelensky seems to be being thrown to the wolves right now. And how is he long for this world? Like, how long until he's actually removed, taken out at this point? Saying now that he will not give up any land concessions for Ukraine. This basically means that he has sealed the fate of that country. And do you think Russia is going to sort of sit back and just allow that to be a part of the negotiations? No land? No, of course. Russian territory already in control. So we're going to talk about that deeply and his just big meeting in 10 Downing Street just a few minutes ago.
Plus, President Trump's increasing frustration with him. He says he is using the war to stay in power. Way to catch up. That is true. So what is the U.S. going to do about it? Are we going to maybe stop weapons? There's a start. There's a thought. Just put that out there. We're also going to talk about how the U.S. government, the Department of Justice, new bombshell memo saying that we are going to track all domestic terrorists. That's not a thing. And it can include anybody, including those with protected beliefs. This should scare you. Hold tight for that. We're also going to talk about Israel's expanding propaganda project. They have, what is the word? It's not doubled, tripled, quadrupled, quintupled when it's five times, when you five times something?
I don't know.
They have quintupled.
Yes. Like quintupled
their budget for propaganda.
Oh,
hold on, that's coming to a phone near you.
All right. And also, we're going to talk about the embalmers. Many more of these embalmers are now coming forward about those white fibrous clots that they're still finding in cadavers. There's been really no drop at all. So that means those individuals that are going and getting COVID shots right now, and the big television marketing push telling everyone to go and get these incredibly damaging shots, and they're still finding them now. Not, this isn't like 2020 or 2021 or 2022. This is 2025, and people who have recently gotten these things. So we're going to talk about the very latest data on all of that and the big cover-up at the CDC and the signs they specifically knew as it related to individuals with myocarditis and those who were taking the shots and then dying within 1 to 2 days afterwards. Is anyone going to go to prison? Where's Fauci in all of this? Like, is anyone going to go to prison? Maybe the greatest catastrophe Armageddon in human history, and people are still walking free.
We should point out those deaths were in the clinical trials that we got, that we had a strike on our channel for reading their own clinical trials. So this should not be new to anyone who's been studying it. So we're going to get to all of that. But first, there's a reason Clayton's in a coat.
That's
inside
right.
The studio.
In my hoodie, because this studio is hot as heck. I'm just going to tell you underneath the lights, but I'm wearing my bearskin hoodie just to show it off to you because I love this thing. But I wear it every day when I'm taking the dog on a walk. It's cold here in the Rocky Mountains, and this thing is an absolute beast. Welcome in, Scott. This thing is fantastic. This is my bearskin hoodie right now, running a 60% off deal, but only if you get your hoodie early. 60% off the bearskin hoodie today. This thing is built like a tank, 340 GSM micro fleece, 10 pockets with a clean, rugged fit that looks awesome. Plus, it zips right into the heavy storm rain jacket to become 100% waterproof when you need it. So when it turns cold, wet, and windy, you're not scrambling last minute. You'll get the free U.S. shipping, fast delivery, and you've locked in your winter gear already. That's a win-win. So do yourself a favor. Text the word redacted to 36912. Again, that's 36912 to lock in your discount. That's 60% off right now. And you'll get a link sent straight to your phone so you can check out later if you're busy right now. And one more thing, when you support Bearskin, you're also supporting the Fallen Outdoors and the Hope for the Warriors Veterans Program. So you're not just buying great gear, you're backing a cause that matters. Don't wait until you're freezing to realize that your hoodie sucks. Get a Bearskin, 60% off. Text the word redacted to 36912. So, and it was a little hot.
Just so people don't think you've lost your mind, Clayton. The audience couldn't hear Grim when he was welcoming in Scott. So, okay.
Because I hear during the beginning of the show, I hear all these like people talking in my ear. I hear people talking, and then like, and Grim will say, "Hey, Scott, welcome into the show. Welcome to the show." And I'm like, "Hey, welcome into the show." And I thought, I think the audience hears that. So I don't want, you know, I'll never forget.
Yeah, exactly. I just didn't want him thinking that like just for no reason whatsoever. You're just like, "Welcome in, Scott."
Yeah, like I'm going crazy. Thank you. I'll never forget. There was a CNN reporter, some dipshit CNN reporter, who was like on a rooftop, and there was a gale force winds, and this entire like awning like fell on this reporter. And instead of like acknowledging that she just got hit in the head by an awning because it's like super windy, she just like it hit her in the head, and she just kept going as if. And like the audience is sitting at home going, "You just got hit in the head with an awning. You could talk about what the hell's going on." Anyway, that's something I just can't stand with TV people. So anyway, just wanted to acknowledge it.
Speaking of things you can hear, my dress is made of like a material that I feel like the microphone is picking up. And I apologize for those of you.
The leaves rustling?
Yeah, that's annoying me slightly. And if it annoys you, I'm sure it's on a long list of annoying things I do. But I apologize for all of them.
Just add it to the list. Add it to the list of your grievances about us. We appreciate it. Hey, all right. Well, let's talk about this. And stop me if you've already heard this before. The Ukrainian puppet dictator Zelensky says no to giving up any Ukrainian land. No Ukrainian land as part of any kind of peace deal. Not sure if he's aware, but those lands are now in Russian control. The latest numbers we're hearing at Redacted from our sources have Ukrainian dead now over 2 million. And I hope to have some updated numbers for you soon. So you don't hold any cards here, Zelensky, except the cards that NATO's puppet masters give you and your CIA handlers. But okay, so you're rejecting what appears to be the most likely method to finally end this proxy war. The peace process has failed. The European warmongers in the UK, France, and Germany have promised to continue funding Ukraine until the last like Ukrainian Christian man is essentially dead. So here, of course, was the meeting that they just held with his little friends there. It was Zelensky with his new girlfriends, Emmanuel Macron, and German Chancellor Friedrich Merz and Keir Starmer in London yesterday. Maybe they had some biscuits in the afternoon. He's being handled by these individuals now. Now, he said that Ukraine has no legal or moral grounds for surrendering its territory. Oh, you're concerned about things that are legal and moral now. Okay. Says the guy who canceled elections. I love your moral high ground here. So what about the time right after you became president and you allegedly had that big sex party where you and your team were passing around 14-year-old girls? Yeah, I know all about that, and so do a lot of other people. Or the time, according to the New York Times, when you and your team stole billions of dollars from U.S. taxpayers and European taxpayers. You were funneling it to your own personal interests. Front page of the New York Times.
Can we just congratulate them for catching up to something we've been reporting for 3 years? Yeah, the Zelensky government's pretty corrupt. Way to catch up, New York Times.
Way to go.
This is timely news 3 years late.
Yeah, I mean, where was your moral compass when this was the headline on the front page of the New York Times? You know, basically you're basically sealing Ukraine's fate at this point. Joining us now is Scott Horton. He is the author of Provoked. He is also the chief bottle washer over at antiwar.com, one of the keenest minds of trying to prevent us into these endless regime change wars. No one knows more about this. Scott, welcome back to the show. Great to see you.
Thank you both for having me. Great to be here.
So I want to talk about this plan, and I want to talk about, you know, basically what it just kind of came out of London specifically, because it's, to me, maybe I'm reading this totally wrong, but if you read the front page of Politico, what the U.S. wants from Ukraine, leave the Donbass one way or the other. That's the Trump position. That's like, that's the U.S. position. Like, you're giving up land as part of this peace agreement. So he's there meeting with this European flock of seagulls, and they're driving him in a totally different direction, see, like purposefully driving a wedge between these peace agreements. What do you make of this?
Well, you know, it really comes back to the buck stops with Donald Trump, because as long as the Europeans are willing to keep forking over the cash, he's willing to keep forking over the weapons. And of course, usually goes unsaid, all of the actual logistical and intelligence support that the United States has been furnishing to the Ukrainian side this whole time. As long as he doesn't call that off, you know, and that is his position of strength to play, such as it is in the war, is that he can keep financing the Ukrainian side. After all, it's not easy on the Russian side, although they are winning. And as you said, I mean, this is, and quite frankly, and as I know your audience understands, this has been the plan, really, since the beginning of the war, was to make the war last a longer time. In fact, there's a new article by a guy named Radchenko, Sergei Radchenko, in Foreign Affairs, saying we can still inflict a strategic defeat on Russia. So they're implicitly conceding, all of them. They've known all along. This means Russia will march further and further west slowly, but that at great cost to themselves too. And I don't know what the real casualty rates and totals are, and I don't know what the real total of rubles spent is. This war has been incredibly costly for the Russians. And so from Washington's point of view, that's the whole goal, is essentially with the Ukrainians as extras in the movie. They're just cannon fodder. In fact, in the book, I show... I'm not really that good of a writer, so I just have collections of quotes of all these politicians and pundits saying, we are getting so much bang for our buck. We are killing Russians on the cheap. We're sending home coffins. We're sending home body bags. We're sending home Russian bodies. But no American soldiers are dying.
Yeah, right. Total
and
lie.
And they'll say that over and over again with not even a mention of the Ukrainians' costs at all.
Well, and that's a total lie, Scott, isn't it?
Society.
I mean, I'm working on this right now, but I mean, that's a total lie. And I want to know if any families are watching right now that have had to like sign an NDA because your son was killed in Ukraine in the United States. And the only reason that you're not talking about it is because you signed an NDA to receive death benefits from the United States government. I want to know how many Americans have actually died in Ukraine, because it's not zero.
Yeah, that's a real good question. You know, they've admitted from time to time that they have clandestine forces there, special operations forces, mm-hmm. and CIA Special Activities Division and so forth, helping to coordinate. They deny that they have them fighting on the ground. But then, of course, they have the so-called volunteers, just like on the Russian side, like the Chinese in the Korean War, the volunteers who go and fight. And many of them paid mercenaries, as you're saying. And I don't know if anybody really knows the numbers there. But look, the whole thing's tragic. As you know, The Russians are winning slowly. They will take the last quarter or so of Donetsk eventually. I don't know how long it will take, but they've already got all of Luhansk. And it looked like, and I'm not sure, you know, because all the reporting out of the talks was, you know, kind of sparse and contradictory, but it seemed like at least the original proposal hashed out by Witkoff and what's his name, the friend of the Kremlin, what included, as I think we talked about this before last time, the possibility at least of the Russians freezing the lines at Zaporizhia and Kherson. They insist on all of Donetsk, but maybe they'll stop at where they are at Zaporizhia and Kherson. If people look at the map, that's the whole Azov coast there, the land, the so-called land bridge between the Donbass and the Crimean Peninsula and their ability to guarantee fresh water to Crimea from the Dnieper River, which the previous regime had cut off. And so, in fact, for the Russians to cross the river and take Kherson on the far side of the river, like after the war is over and they just get over there, like, you know, cross, that's one thing. But taking that land by force would be extraordinarily difficult, just as the Ukrainians have had an incredibly difficult time trying to dislodge them from the other side of the river over these last 2 years. So there is basis for compromise here. In other words, look, the Russians are not giving up Zaporizhzhia, Kherson, but if they're willing to draw the lines where they are, that's the best you're going to get. But see, look at the politics from Kiev's side. Kiev doesn't want to order their troops to turn around and withdraw from land where they still stand and fight, right? They don't. And politically, you know, in as again, I'm sorry, because I know you guys know this, but there are very hard right-wing nationalist forces in Ukraine who have for years threatened to murder this president and his predecessor, Poroshenko, too, if they were to dare compromise with the Russians and end this war. The plan is to just win someday, or at least lose by just total defeat. But if you compromise and if you lose at the peace table, you sign a deal, then that's the stab in the back. That's betraying on the sunk cost fallacy all the heroes who've died in the war so far. And Zelensky knows that he's really in no position because of those domestic pressures, never mind from what he's getting from Washington and London, that if he ends the war on anything but an absolutely has to basis, then his life is forfeit potentially.
Right. I mean, think about the lost lives from 2022 until now, when there were peace negotiations in Istanbul and Russia offered to freeze the line then. So all of this territory, they never had to lose. So now they're saying we won't give that up. They've lost it. They could have kept it, plus thousands of lives. This is not like, oh, I wish I hadn't lost money. These are people, human lives. So I don't know how he's not going straight to hell for this. I guess that's not up to you or me. So that's not really a question. One question I have is that why does he have to be in Europe for this peer pressure to happen? Is it so there's no paper trail of the Boris Johnsons of the world who are talking him into continuing the war? Or, I mean, all we get from it are these really dumb influencer sizzle reels where it's like music and him walking up to Macron and they're hugging and then the inspirational war optics. It's so dumb. Who is that for? And is there another purpose for him to be going to Europe in person?
Well, a couple things. First of all, you're absolutely right that the Russians' demands did not include Zaporizhzhia and Kherson until September of 2022, long after peace could have been concluded if the US and UK had allowed it. So you're 100% right about that. And that is pure evil, what they did. It's just horrific the way that they, first of all, let this war commence when they could have prevented it through honest diplomacy, but then the way they deliberately sabotaged the peace talks when they could have prevented the war from getting that much worse. And to think that that was, you know, years ago now is just, it's crazy. As far as Zelensky going around, you know, it's really hard to say. Sometimes these trips, they're just, you know, they're all scripted beforehand and everybody knows exactly what's going to happen. And other times, not so much. Other times you really have leaders coming with specific questions, specific demands or conditions or what. And I think Zelensky is in a very tough position here. And because he knows the Europeans are, they can't really afford the, you know, to continue to bankroll his war for very long. This is all directly, you know, in America, somehow they get away with just printing the money. Well, whatever. I don't know. Maybe they don't get away with it, but over there, they feel really constrained as far as their budgets. They are literally cutting programs for their own, you know, social welfare in order to pay for the war instead, that kind of thing. And so they're very limited politically is how far they can go. So it's possible that he's there actually really to kiss up to them and beg them to keep the money flowing. You know, and I think I'm very curious about what you guys think of this, actually, because, you know, it's easy to consider them all just nothing but the worst liars all the time. But then again, like, there really is a syndrome of these people believing their own BS a lot of the times too. And some of the time, the European leaders sound like they truly are afraid of Russia, and they truly think that the Russians, maybe they're not going to march all the way, you know, to Poland, but that soon they'll take the Baltics, and after the Baltics, then maybe Poland. And you know what I mean? Like, they really do seem to be, they say it so often. I wonder if they're telling the truth about what they really think at all.
Like,
you know,
if you ever, I was a Seinfeld fan, you know, and it's like Costanza, he reminded Jerry, you know, he said to Jerry one time, he said, Jerry, remember, it's not a lie if you believe it.
Believe it.
Right. Yeah. So George was the best liar of them all. Right. And so I think they've repeated it to themselves so many times that Russia is going to invade Europe over and over and over again. They say that they actually believe it. And then, of course, it's pushed out on propaganda on the media. And of course, the clampdown on censorship across that country and social media. So you can't do what we're doing here on Redacted and tell the truth. Putin responded to this, I think, this morning. Putin came out and said, he's like, we laugh about it. We have absolutely zero interest in invading Europe. He said, we actually kind of laugh about it. He's like, because European leaders will tell their people that we're going to invade, and we're shocked by it. We have no intention of doing that, and we laugh about it. Like, so it's, he's like, but the reason that they're lying to you is because they want this war. They want to keep funneling this money into this war, into this proxy war, and they can't admit defeat. So, I mean, Putin addressed it kind of head on this morning.
Yeah, well, no surprise.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting because, okay, you do have, and this is the so-called, you know, people always take this out of context, but this is what Putin was talking about when he was complaining about the fall of the Soviet Union, was that it was a disaster for ethnic Russians who were so-called left behind, right? This is what this one expert called a beached diaspora, where the Russian borders withdrew. But ethnic Russians were left behind, especially in Kazakhstan, but also in Ukraine and in Estonia and Lithuania. I think not as much Latvia. I might have that wrong. But like, for example, there's this town in eastern Estonia. I think it's called Nesta. I always say it wrong. I'm sorry. But it's a very Russian town in eastern Estonia. And it was always a Russian town. You know, going back, these lines are always pretty fluid. But it had been a Russian town. It's full of ethnic Russians now. But the thing is, what you don't have there is an ongoing civil war where these people are being bombed and where the peace deals have been scotched, and the thing just keeps getting, you know, continue on for 7 years in a row with no end in sight, no resolution in sight, and a buildup of their military forces and all of these things. If that was the case, then yes, I think you would see the Russians redraw that border by force before it got too far out of hand. And so, yes, I think essentially that's right, that they pushed this lie in order to obfuscate from the fact that there was an ongoing crisis in Ukraine that their war was meant to solve. Not that it really did. They really escalated the crisis by a hell of a lot. But there was something happening in Ukraine that is not happening in Estonia. So could he just send his guys in there? I mean, maybe. But as long as the people of eastern Estonia are free and they're not clamoring for Russian protection, then that remains very unlikely. And especially when, yes, they are members of NATO. And who knows exactly what America would do if they really crossed those lines.
Now, it's interesting, this Trump admission, Zelensky has no power. He doesn't have the cards here. And Russia has the cards, that Russia's in a better position. That was according to the Politico article this morning. And we've known that for a very long time, but the Biden administration refused to admit it. The Trump administration has been saying it all along, but it's kind of showing us how little power President Trump himself has to stop it, because it seems pretty easy to me. Stop the weapons, stop the money, stop the intelligence. They're left holding the bag. They have to come to the peace negotiation. So what does this tell us about President Trump's power to end this war? Is it overstated? And if so, who is pulling the strings?
Well, I don't want to give him like too much credit or anything, but I just to acknowledge the difficult position that he's in here. Imagine a situation where America's backing the Palestinian resistance against the Israelis, right? And then we turn around and leave them high and dry. In fact, maybe we help get them into this fight and get them bombed to smithereens. And we prolong it and prolong it, prolong it, and then turn around and leave them. And that's kind of the situation in Ukraine. In Israel-Palestine, we back the bully. In Ukraine, America's backing the defenders who have been invaded and are losing their territory. So to just turn around and leave them high and dry is bad PR for President Trump. And see, the thing is, the position he's in too is he knows that the Russians know that they're winning and they don't have to stop now. So what reason can he give them to stop now? Is he has to be able to make a bunch of big promises to them, but he also, he thinks at least, has to be able to threaten that, hey, look, I can keep financing Zelensky's side of this thing forever. And so that's his real only card that he has to play. Otherwise, what's he going to do? He's just going to tell, and this is what I would do, don't get me wrong, but I'm just saying all things being equal politically and Donald Trump being Donald Trump, not Ron Paul, he's not going to tell Zelensky, that's it, I really mean it this time. Mm-hmm. No more weapons, no more money, no more nothing. I demand that you essentially unconditionally surrender to the Russians. He's just not going to do that. And so instead, what's going to happen is the Russians are going to continue to win the war slowly until they win it all at once. And I don't know how long that'll be, but time is clearly on their side, as Trump and you just acknowledged. That's the simple situation there. So,
Scott, how much time does Ukraine have left in its current position?
I really don't know. I mean, hell, I had no idea that they could possibly last this long. They showed that they have no offensive capability whatsoever in the spring of 23 when they launched their failed offensive of 23. And it's been, even that was nothing. So it's downhill since September of 22 for them.
Yeah, and over 2 million dead.
Slowly rolling downhill.
Yeah.
And look, they've got conscription. It's a very big country. It's, you know, a couple of 10 million people. It's the size of Texas. So they're still fighting age males aplenty out west to be conscripted and sent out to fight. So as long as America and Europe are still there providing weapons, you know, I don't know. It could come down to like whatever, a certain number of talented officers are killed and there's just nobody left to lead on the ground there. But as far as like continuing to come up with infantrymen, apparently they can.
Well, if you look at, you know, RIA.ru is Russian state media, and they keep a pretty reliable map of the line, of where the front line is, the territory Russia has gained, and where they intend to end. So that's a good resource, as I always look at. And you normally see that the blue dots, which represent the Ukrainian army, are usually not stationed along the front lines. They just aren't there. And so they can sort of prolong this war by just not being there. They usually have, I would say, I'm looking at it right now, like maybe a third, less than a third of their army is even stationed on the front line. The rest is north of the war along the Russian border. So they can keep this going without continuously, you know what I mean? That's what I think seems to be their strategy, because I'm always watching these dots like a, you know, battleship game, and they just don't move. They don't move down into the front line. So it seems to me that's the tactic. But I don't know. I would have to run that by a military expert.
Yeah. And look, one of the reasons I favor the more conservative estimates of the casualties is because even though you do have the muddy, frozen trenches and the artillery and the tanks and all of that stuff from the First World War, I don't think you really have these massive waves of men being slaughtered at the thousands and thousands and thousands a day, 10,000 a day, this kind of thing on the World War One type of level. If you read the Washington Post in 2002, sure, that was how the Russians were fighting, but I don't think there's any real evidence of that you ever had like these, you know, the Somme or whatever, like these mass casualties on the battlefield. I think guys are getting chewed up by the tens and hundreds a day.
Yeah.
And so,
it's horrible.
You know, it's ugly as hell, but it unfortunately is sustainable for both sides, right? To keep going. The Russians keep winning slowly and the Ukrainians keep losing slowly. If we had the same conversation in 1 year, I wouldn't be shocked.
All right. Well, we'll make an appointment. Thank you so much, Clayton. Do you want to pull up the map?
I'm trying to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Clayton's trying to show the map that I was just referring to from his laptop. And again, it's in Russian, But if you look, the blue dots are the Ukrainian army, and they are mostly along the northern Russian border. And there's a few where the Russian army is, the Ukrainian army is not. Where they're along the front lines is down south, close to Crimea and Odessa, but there's no Russian troops there. So
I think it's not a lot of head-to-head
combat here. That seems to be why it's able to linger in this horrific way.
Yeah. Well, see, those dots, though, represent the larger concentrations of forces. Where the fighting is taking place, it's six guys fighting 10.
Yeah.
This kind of thing. Real small unit warfare up and down the line.
And that's why it's taking so long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All Scott right. Horton, always great to see you. Thank you so much.
Check out the Scott Horton Academy if you have not already. It's a great rundown of some of the most important conflicts in U.S. in modern times and U.S. history as well. So fantastic university's just been launched. Thank you so much.
Thank you both.
Thanks, Scott.
All right. Coming up, we're going to talk about how the U.S. government will be tracking extremists. Most likely that involves you. Have you ever said, oh, I wish we could have a revolution? I wish this. Have you ever said, end the Fed? You're an extremist. You're on the DOJ's list.
That's what our whole show is.
Yeah. Ever heard of the Declaration of Independence? We are supposed to be allowed to call for the overthrow of government. But now, according to a new DOJ document, that labels you an extremist and they're going to track you. And they're going to survey you. We're going to tell you all about that. But just before we do, we want to tell you about our friends over at Shopify. Because if you're shopping around the internet and you see that little purple Shop Pay button, that tells you that you are on a site that's run by Shopify. The redacted store that you're looking at right now does run on Shopify because it's so easy. It's great for us. If we have an idea, we'd like to put something on redactedstore.com. We can put it up in just minutes and launch it to the world. Shopify helps us not only with the graphic design and the presentation, but the back end, e-commerce, all of the above. That's why so many big name brands, not just Redacted, run on Shopify. And you will notice that, in fact, a big portion of the internet does. So if you have an idea, you should use Shopify to launch it to the world. They will help you from your idea to your $1 million sale. They will give you that leg up to make a beautiful, ready-to-go website to launch yourself to the world. So if you go to Shopify.com/redacted, you can sign up for a 1 month trial period today and you'll be so glad you did. Head on over to Shopify.com/redacted. One more time, that's Shopify.com/redacted. How you doing over there?
People are asking if my Christmas sweater was extremist because I have
Oh, yeah.
We have our new designs in our store, and I was wearing my Christmas sweater that Grimm designed. And I think, what was the one, the title? It was...
Tis the Season to Question Everything.
Yeah, Tis the Season to Question Everything. I wonder if that's considered extremist by these new standards.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. We also have, I believe in Santa more than the government. I don't know. If you don't believe in the government, you're a domestic terrorist.
I guess so. If you don't believe in Kash Patel and Dan Bongino, you must be a problem.
Right.
You must be on their naughty list, I guess.
Okay. I've been asking you to pay attention to the idea that the Trump administration has launched about domestic terrorism, because that should not be a thing. And it expands government powers. We see that in action now. And it is terrifying. This is a warning that the Justice Department has unveiled a plan to track so-called extremists under the banner of domestic terrorism. And here's the part no one wants to say out loud. That could be you if they don't like how you think. Now, you may hear the phrase domestic terrorist and you're like, yeah, good. Get those dangerous people out of here. Get after them. But you should think again, because the Constitution does not allow for the recognition of domestic terrorism as a distinct crime. And there's a reason for that, because if you can define government dissent as terrorism, the government has the power, expanding power. This is an elastic political term, not a fixed category. There is such a thing as foreign terrorism. That's clearly defined in our statutes as violence against America supported by foreign groups. The category has boundaries. Domestic terrorism has no such guardrails. It is whatever the government says it is. And once the state begins to construct, fund, and define internal dissenters as terrorists, we are no longer talking about national security. We're talking about a mechanism to suppress political opposition and track you or anyone on the suspicion list. That's what this new directive says. And when I show you how they're going to define it, you should be afraid. This document was published by Clip News. Here is where you can find the download, and here is the document. It's dated December 4th from the Office of the Attorney General, Pam Bondi, and it is responding to President Trump's September memorandum titled Countering Domestic Terrorism and Organized Political Violence. Now, this was written in the wake of the Charlie Kirk assassination. Shocker that the government used that assassination to expand their own powers. Here are some of the examples they give on how foreign terrorists operate. They're saying this example of what is now domestic terrorist or extremist includes organized rioting, looting, doxing, swatting, conspiracy to impede law enforcement, destruction of property, or violent civil disorder. Those things are already illegal. They don't need the terrorism label. You can't do them already.
So hate crimes.
Right.
If I murder someone, that's a murder. That's hateful. Like, it doesn't need to also be labeled a hate crime on top of it.
Right. Now, I pulled out the most extreme examples of how they're defining terrorism here because I think that it's crazy to label ideologies as terror. Now, I just showed you it written out. Here's the list of what I pulled out of there. They're saying domestic terrorists includes opposition to law or immigration enforcement, right? Again, we've already talked about how that's illegal, but then extreme views in favor of mass migration and open borders.
So my views, like I'm absolutely against mass migration into the United States.
Do you want people arrested who disagree with you?
No, I don't. Like, if you you can be like Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer or whatever, yeah, and believe that we should just open our borders. Like, that's your right as an American to have those beliefs. I think you're an idiot. I think you're crazy. And illegal immigrants.
But
I'm not a terrorist. Right. Or you're not a terrorist for thinking that.
Sure.
So, I mean,
let's
insane.
Go back to the list. So they're saying that these are terrorist beliefs. Is extreme views in favor of mass migration. Adherence to radical gender ideology, anti-Americanism, anti-capitalism, anti-Christianity, hostility to traditional views on family, religion, and morality, and support for overthrowing the U.S. government. That's in the document that I just showed you. This is my list. Now, all of these are protected beliefs. Even if they're extremist in anyone's views, you're allowed to be anti-capitalist.
Even if they're extremist, but who gets to tell us what extremist, what is extreme?
Right.
Right.
Good point.
So they're just beliefs. They're not extreme in any one way. Just because you don't like them or just because you think that they might push the boundaries a little bit doesn't make them extreme.
I think maybe because the Biden administration wanted to prevent us from saying that men can't be women. Now, the Trump administration may think that they want us to go the other way and punish from someone for saying men can be women. I have my beliefs, right? I think that you should be able to say either. Only one of them's true.
Right.
Right? But you should be able to say either thing.
Yeah. They should just add into this anybody that actually supports and endorses the U.S. Constitution is an extremist.
Right.
Because that's basically...
Yeah, exactly.
That's what they're saying.
Well, no, there was in the law books, where they do their police training, their manuals and stuff. It says that people are suspicious if they have a constitution. One of the things was if they're missing fingers because they might be making bombs, third party bumper stickers on their bumper.
If they have an American flag on their house, which, yeah, I guess that I'm, yeah, this, but this was during the Biden administration. So you see how these things swing. It's like, oh, just someone's definition of what extremist is, like the Biden administration's idea was that, if you go hunting, or that you have an American flag on your house, you carry a pocket constitution, that you're an extremist.
Right. And so now the Biden administration has swung the other way, or the Trump administration, yeah, has swung so far in the other way, saying that you cannot be anti-capitalist. Sure, you can. You can do that. You can't be anti-American? You are allowed to be anti-American. You can't be anti-Christian. Yes, you can. We have freedom of religion in this country. Now, if we could just put that list back up one more time. The one at the bottom really gives me heartburn. That you are a domestic terrorist if you support the overthrow of the U.S. government, which would mean that this document here is a domestic terrorist document. Do you know what this is? Let's just go to the next one. You know what that is?
That's
the Declaration of Independence, which declares that it is the right of the people to alter or abolish or institute a new government. So literally, the Declaration of Independence allows us, it's literally says it's in the fabric of who we are to be able to talk about overthrowing the government. Now the Department of Justice says that makes you a terrorist. Clayton's, yes, I got that. You want to speak to it?
Well, yeah, I want to acknowledge that I'm holding this. This is Thomas Jefferson, famous quote, of course, when the people fear the government, there is tyranny. When the government fears the people, there is liberty. And of course, he famously talks about throwing off the shackles of government, which Natalie just pointed out. So that's our right as Americans. Why would we have to love our government?
I guess, or else be labeled a terrorist.
We have to love Pam Bondi. Yeah. We have to love Kash Patel. We have to love these people.
We have to.
Okay. Just want to be clear.
Yeah.
Okay.
What were you going to say, Philip?
My mind is blown because I'm just like processing this because like Clayton just showed us a piece of extremist propaganda.
Right. Who is this guy? Who is this guy?
Yeah.
Who's this clown? Yeah. Somebody can Pam
just
Bondi.
Just think if that list existed.
Can you go out and get that guy? Go get that guy.
Add him to the list. Add him to that list.
All of the founding fathers would be domestic terrorists.
Yes.
But based on these rules.
Yes.
I mean, this was the stuff, of course, that King George labeled. These were extremists. This is what King George said about George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and Patrick Henry and these individuals. They were extremists. They are terrorists. They need to be killed. They need to be strung up in the town square and made an example of, like Patrick Henry, so people could see his rotting corpse hanging from the gallows for weeks and weeks and weeks.
Okay. So, yes, you're making the point that I wanted to make, that by this document's definition, the founding fathers were terrorists, and they would also be tracked. Here's what the document gives the right to, is that the FBI is going to make lists of people who believe this and start tracking them. How do you think we're going to start tracking them? Well, I don't know for a fact, but I do know that the U.S. government has commissioned the technology for tracking people. They are currently using it in Gaza. We reported on that last week. If you haven't watched this piece we did last week, please watch it. We showed how Palantir has created this software to track Palestinians. They are also using it with their program called Maven, which is sort of an AI compilation of a person's online profile. It's developed with a no-bid contract from the U.S. military, so the U.S. owns it. You better believe that they're going to use it not just on foreign terrorists, which they, you know, use on Hamas, but also domestic ones now that they've allowed themselves to use that term. They are also using it with an AI program called Dataminer, which can scan social media to monitor risk intelligence. So if you say something about overthrowing the government or anti-capitalist, Dataminer is going to catch you. And they're going to put you on the list.
As much as you want to comment on Laura Loomer and Ben Shapiro and all these Zionist posts, I guess it's time to stop. Stop voicing your opinion after their posts.
Well, yeah. And there you go. The surveillance state is multiplying out of bounds. Now, who's to stop it? The Supreme Court has many times ruled that discussion of overthrowing the government is protected speech. So the Supreme Court could rule on this, but who would sue? Who would bring it to the court? Elon Musk? Is he the only one willing to do so? Like, I don't know, right? And even if they do that, when we had the Snowden documents, the deep state just kind of worked around it. The intelligence community continued to track us. So the only thing I can think of is just to scream about it here on the podcast. We all know about it. What are we going to do now? Let me know. Come up with some ideas, because this is terrifying.
Well, and you also saw what the what the Pentagon just announced, right? This new partnership with Google.
And yes. Like all a of new this military AI.
AI built by, you know, built with Google and Gemini and all of this back end yeah. tracking and surveillance and AI coordination so that we can be the best AI warfighters.
Yeah, you know what I had?
The best AI warfighters.
I had a thought about that because they want you to filter your thoughts through, you know, government trained AI so they can give you their own opinions. So I thought of taking the Chelsea Manning video. What was the video that he leaked to WikiLeaks?
Yeah.
And putting yeah. it in there and being like, is this authentic? See if I just blow up the system.
Like it just starts eating itself like Cyberdyne Securities.
Yeah. yeah. The chat room will know. What was the name of that video? Please let me know.
It's a famous one. Yeah. I forget. Anyway, coming up, we've got more news to get to here on the show. Israel and the amount of Israel is launching its biggest propaganda push ever right now. So just in time for the holidays, you might notice an inordinate amount of propaganda being pushed to you on social media. Of course, one of the big strategies is to try to tell you that the United States is becoming the Islamic capital of the world, that the Islamification of the United States is happening. It's all meant that may be happening in part, of course, and that's happening in certain areas, of course. But what it's doing, it is meant to totally distract from what Benjamin Netanyahu just rolled out over the past 48 hours, which is an admission from the river to the sea, which he said openly, which, by the way, I thought that was like illegal. You're not allowed to say that. And that's like, what is that? Like terrorist propaganda? No,
you can't say it as a Palestinian. You can say it if you're Israeli or, you know, okay. yeah.
So anyway, you know, it's all to distract you from that. So we're going to talk about the Israeli push on that. But first,
we want to tell you about masa chips because, hey, did you know that most chips are made with seed oils? But it wasn't always like that. In fact, decades ago, most chips were made with beef tallow, which is obviously a lot more healthy for the human body. It's not a synthetic. It actually comes from the fat of beef. Well, masa chips has gone old school. They're doing it the old way by making their chips in beef tallow. So that they are healthier for you. If you are a chip lover, like we all are in this household, then you need to know about masa chips. They come in various flavors, and they're really a hearty chip. You see there that they're dipping them in salsa. They hold up really well to bean dip, guacamole. They don't snap like some of the other chips, and they make a fantastic snack or a fantastic meal. We serve them to teenagers. The teenagers like them, and they can always spot if you're trying to replace something with a healthy version. They usually know it. With masa chips, they did not. So check them out for yourself. Go to masachips.com/redacted news. Use the code redacted news, and you'll get 25% off your first order. If you don't feel like ordering chips online, you can always visit a Sprouts store and pick up a bag. But again, if you'd like to order for 25% off, then do it. Use the QR code that you see right there or go to masachips.com/redacted news and use the code redacted news for 25% off your first order.
Dallas Wings 88 in our chat room says, I love masa chips, original and blue corn. Awesome. And someone else in the chat says, we need to come up with our own redacted chips. So maybe masa, if you're watching, we know you watch the show.
What would
maybe,
the redacted flavor be?
Well, we'd have to come up with something because I love a ranch or
spicy.
Could we do like a spicy, like sour cream and onion? Because I love sour cream and onion.
Yeah.
No. I say everything we do has to be plain because we have to say all the ingredients have been redacted.
Maybe.
Plain. Yeah. Some boring plain chips. No. You guys vote. Should it be? Yeah. Like, some spicy, but I like the ranch style. I love sour cream and onion. My daughters love the salt and vinegar.
Maybe a nice spicy kimchi flavor.
Spicy kimchi.
Get out of here.
Get out of here. All right, so you guys vote. Yeah, masa, if you're watching, let's come up with a redacted chip. That'd be awesome on the show. I would love that. I would eat that all day long.
Okay. And chat room, you let me down. It was collateral murder. That's the video that Chelsea Manning leaked to.
They're talking about chips.
I know, but I asked you for a favor.
You asked them for a leaked government video.
No. I didn't even know that video had a title.
I know. I didn't.
What's the IDMB or IBM?
I knew what it was about, MB but I didn't know it had a title.
Oh.
What did it get on Rotten Tomatoes?
Dennis says spicy nacho cheese. Spicy nacho cheese. Redactitos. Redactitos. Chuck in our chat room says, man, this fucking guy in kimchi, referring to Philip, who just like, all he talks about is kimchi. Yesterday, someone was like, oh no, this other guy, Kirby, one of our viewers, is like, oh no. Not Philip in a kimchi story again, please. They know that Philip, that's the only thing Philip eats. His body runs on kimchi, by the way.
Yeah, right. Probably better than most.
That's right. That's probably true.
It's good for you.
All right.
All right, if you think your algorithm is full of pro-Israel content now, wait until 2026, because the Israeli Knesset has approved an enormous public relations campaign worth about $729 million, which is 5 times more than they spent on 2025's public diplomacy PR budget last year. Foreign Minister Gideon Sa'ar announced this initiative as a major component, he's calling it, of national security. So it's the fact that you don't love Israel is a national security risk. That's how they're justifying this huge spending. He's calling it a battle for public awareness and the promotion of Israel's image worldwide. So they need a publicist, basically, that they're giving themselves a publicist. He says that this will be aimed at, look at this, every country, not just the U.S., on social media, in the press, and in civil society. That gives me pause a little bit. How does Israeli media and PR influence civil society? Here's where he confirms the amount. And again, interestingly, he says Israel cannot succeed without repairing its reputation. Well, that's not what Zionists say when they argue with you on X. They say Israel doesn't need your money. They don't need your goodwill. They're fine without it. But the Israeli government is saying, yeah, we do. We actually need to win back the hearts and minds of the population, that goodwill that we had. We squandered it by killing civilians 2 to 1, at least, for terrorists. That number, let's put a pin on that, okay? So what are they going to do to repair their reputation now that we've all seen women, children, grandparents, civilians killed en masse, Christian churches bombed to smithereens? We don't all feel the warm fuzzies from that because we're human. Here's a few examples of the things that they're doing to run their PR campaign on you. Newsmax is running daily Israeli updates, and they're highlighting Israeli accomplishments like this smart meter bit that they do. Now, notice this is on Instagram. The comments are turned off. Why do you think that is?
Wait. Newsmax has a daily Israel update segment.
And it's not about war. It's just about Israeli accomplishments. Just like fun things that Israel has given to the world. Which there are numerous, but they don't do that for America. They don't do it for Mozambique. Only Israel, right? So they're doing this constantly. Let's go back to that screenshot if you want. There's only 190 likes. And no comments are allowed. The comments are turned off.
And I'm sure those 190 likes, those 190 likes are probably bots, you know,
right?
Paid for.
Yeah. Do you think, Clayton, that this is an independent newsroom decision, Newsmax doing this?
Yeah. I let me tell you, that's total bullshit. So I'm sure that Newsmax sitting around a room, like there's a team of people, and they're like, hey, we're coming up for segments on our show today. I got an idea. Let's do an Israel update segment. No. This came from on high. Of course, someone handed this down. We're going to include this in your broadcast on a regular basis, in the same way that Roger Ailes at Fox News, my old boss, was a Catholic, and would absolutely make sure that there were like Catholic segments in a lot of the shows on a regular basis. Like that came from on high. So an Israel update segment comes from someone up on high. That doesn't come from some intern sitting there. I got an idea.
Right. So when you're like, God, I wish, you know, Israel would stop bombing Christian churches in Gaza and stop killing sheep in the West Bank and stealing properties in the West Bank. I wish they would stop doing that. But then you see this like, hey, they have really great, they invented the drip system. Isn't that amazing? Then you're like, well, then I forgive them. That's cool. I'm watching this. I feel different now. I forget that I was upset before about these, you know, murders and slaughter. So obviously that's not going to work, but that was someone's brilliant idea.
No, you're kind of turning me around on this. Right. You know, that whole genocide thing where you shoot babies in the head, which has been confirmed by IDF soldiers. So don't come at me, chat room, and say that's propaganda. It's true. So that whole, you know, genocide thing. But, you know, they created the irrigation drip system. So that's I feel much better about them now.
Right.
Well, they gave us the aqueduct. What else? They gave us roads. They gave us.
Right. NASA gave us Velcro. I feel much better about their lies. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
I just feel like this is like almost a weird admission, but I'm trying to think this through because they must actually think like they must actually think that people that disagree with Israel are just anti-Semitic and not upset by Israel's actions.
No, so because you're thinking deeper now on this. This is a good way to think because you're bringing up a great point, a really great point, which is like, who is this for? Right? Because the people that are watching Newsmax, I don't know who those people are, but they're like, they're already all in on this, right? Or the people that are watching like Fox News, right? They're already all in on this. So like,
That's what I was thinking. It's like,
where's this going to go?
It's like they haven't learned. Yeah, they think they're like, this is a good segue from the newspaper. But it's like, because it's like, that's where this stuff would have worked in the past, right? But it's not going to work on social media today.
And that's what I'm thinking. It's like, it's kind of like going along with what Natalie was saying is like, so if they do like these puff pieces on Israel, that doesn't, I don't, you know, Israel did good things. I mean, that's great. That doesn't excuse the fact that of the genocide. Like, right. I'm not going to forget that. So yeah, who is this targeting?
Yeah, right. they're hoping you will forget that.
Right, they're hoping you'll like completely compartmentalize these things and just kind of look away and be like, you know, when your friends are at here's the new Israeli ad that they're rolling out. You know, when you're at your Christmas dinner and someone brings up the genocide in Gaza, just remind those people about Israel's drip system. And you're going to change minds around that Thanksgiving or holiday dinner.
Right. I mean, you can be really impressed with the drip system. That's fine, right? And Israeli smart. You can feel that way and still be against the IDF and the government of Israel.
Like, they're great at surveillance.
Human possibility.
Israel makes the best spyware, you know? And you can remind when people, over your holiday dinner, when someone brings up the genocide in Gaza, you can say, I know they kill babies and they shoot a lot of people. But you have to remember, they've created some of the best spyware. And so even like your phone right now, like people are able to listen on your iPhone right now. I hope you'll remember that when you're criticizing Israel and their genocide.
Yeah.
And it's like they don't pay attention to data. I would love to see the back end data on that post to see how many impressions it had versus the 190 likes. Because if you see anyone post anything right now on X, they get ratioed every single time when they try to put out that kind of shit.
For people that don't know what ratioed mean, because this is like a new word for me over the past year, last year I was like, what does ratioed mean? You know, like, but it's crazy. You're right. When someone puts out a ridiculous post like that, like all these Israeli Zionist influencers who are like went to Israel and got paid, you know, and then came back and they're like, Israel did all this great stuff and blah, blah, blah. They got ratioed big time. I mean, people like the comments were upside down slamming them for their propaganda. So I guess I just answered my question, but anyway, means that their post compared to the negative post is like overwhelming. Yeah.
All right. Let's move on to a few other tactics that they're going to be putting on us. This mind control that they want us to bite on so that we forget that we're upset about the attack on innocent civilians. Last week, Israel held a summit for 1,000 American Christian pastors, training them to be ambassadors for Israel. They say they want to do it again because it was so much fun. Next time, they're going to do it with 10,000. This is just one of those pastors named Dwayne Howard. I wonder now, does he have to register as a foreign agent now that he's holding that document as an ambassador for Israel? That's interesting. Now, there has been a huge backlash online about this because Christians are saying, I want to know if my pastor has pledged allegiance to a world government, which the Bible explicitly forbids. And so there are calls to make a list of the pastors that went. X-users are saying that they will be compiling this, specifically Gen X Girl.
I was going to ask you that because... Well, Gen X, okay, sorry, but a bunch of people, the last time you did this story...
All the comments were like, who? I need to know.
I want to check and see if my pastor's on this list. So many people want to know.
Right. I mean, I guess it'd be worth asking them. But again, I think if they've pledged their allegiance to Israel, they may see it in Israel's best interest to not admit it. And so, again, they've compromised Christianity. Like, these people are not Christians then any longer. They no longer... pledged to the church, which is supposed to be the body of Christ. They are now allied with a foreign government. So should you switch churches? In my opinion, absolutely. You should do that. Now, here's another major initiative that you should watch for. In September, DropSite News reported this. It's a publicity report that was commissioned by Israel. The task was to study tactics to rehabilitate the image of Israel. And the report concluded... there's not really much they can do to rehabilitate the Israel image until the Gaza solution is resolved. Now, take a look at what they say. They found that most Europeans and Westerners believe that Israel is a genocidal, apartheid country, but they also believe that Hamas is a terrorist group, because you can think both things. That's telling. It shows that opposition to Israel is not support for Hamas. It shows that Israel knows this. They have data, but they still call anyone who opposes Israel a Hamas supporter, which is lazy and manipulative. So what does a report say that they can do to counter the whole genocide reputation? Here's what it says. It says that the world is ripe to foment fear of radical Islam and jihadism. They found that, you know, most people already are kind of afraid of radical Islam and jihadism. If we lean into that, the world will not be so focused on radical Israel. And, you know, that will be a good distraction. Prepare yourself, you guys, for false flags and attacks in this vein. You can see already.
Oh, well, you can
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, if you watch on X, you can already see who the people are, the people that they're like reached out and said, here's your orders.
Yeah. Here's one. I brought an example of this. This person is always pro-Israel, saying, look at this. In Berlin, thousands of Syrians taking over a Christmas market, and the West should not tolerate this. What that was, it was something that happened over the weekend. It was a one-year celebration of the downfall of the Assad government in Syria. It was peaceful. It is the equivalent of you in the United States seeing a Cinco de Mayo celebration or September 16th celebration from Mexican Americans. We allow that. That's, I think we enjoy it. We participate. We're fine with that. Is anyone against Cinco de Mayo here? Are you anti-Cinco de Mayo?
No, the only thing I don't like about it. The only thing I don't like about it is people that think it's a Mexican Independence Day.
Right. Okay. Are you against September 16th?
No, I'm not against September 16th.
And celebrations
of
that.
What is September 16th?
It's real Mexican Independence Day.
That's the real Mexican Independence Day. Cinco de Mayo is just like fun to have chips and guacamole day.
Cinco de Mayo is a battle.
It's a specific battle.
September 16th.
St. Patrick's Day? I mean.
Yeah, are we okay with that? St. Patrick's Day? You know.
Thelinster 1258 in our chat room says this is propaganda. Exactly, it's propaganda. That's exactly what it is. You're hitting the nail on the head.
What I'm saying?
No, not what you're saying.
I'm telling you about propaganda.
Exposing the propaganda. Yeah. He's just acknowledging that this is propaganda.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah,
yes.
You're right. I'm trying to think, like, would I. Is there a way to accuse me of having a reason to tell you this propaganda that would be propaganda? Because I want you to always assume that there's a psyop going on, so you shouldn't trust me by default. But yeah, is there a way that somebody could think that I'm running propaganda on you by trying to show you the programming? I don't know. I really don't want you to think that.
No, because their whole argument then is, oh, then it must be Qatar. You know, the other argument is like, oh, everything's run by Qatar. Like,
right.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it is. Okay. It's like, yeah. Laura Loomer today like tweeted. She's like, is everyone in Washington taking money from Qatar? And I about fell out of my chair. I'm like, really? You're going to say that? You're worried about Qatari money?
And they're also worried about sending money illegally to Somalia. That's something the Free Press is on a lot. That's interesting because there's a lot of background channels to send money to Israel, but the Free Press is not on that because its reason for existence is to support Israel. So they're trying to make you look at these other Islamic nations as the real problem that serves a purpose. So, you know, be prepared for this Islamophobia to hit you full on in the face. Will it work? Let me know what you think.
Yeah, will you fall for it? I guess that's the real question.
Yeah. Are you ready to hate some Muslims to cover up for
Israel's genocide? It's like, that's a good strategy.
They always need a boogeyman.
Yeah, you need a boogeyman. It's like, who said that famously in a movie? It's in The Wizard of Oz,
Jack Bauer. Oh.
Well, no. The Wizard of Oz, right, is like people need a boogeyman. So for Israel to sort of recalibrate and actually get people back on its side after shooting kids in the head, like they need... Like, guess what? You know, your country's being taken over by Islamists.
Did you go off and see Wicked without me?
No.
That's literally the plot of Wicked.
I know, that's why I said
we refuse to see it, but he's quoting from it at length.
Because it's in the trailer. I mean, we saw that trailer for Wicked like 8,000 times where Jeff Goldblum.
Checking your credit card. I bet Jeff, you went.
Yeah, I snuck out and went to go see Wicked. Take away my man card.
Go together either.
No, punch me in the balls, or as my favorite Philadelphia Philly John Crux says, you know, kill me if I ever do something like that.
David tried to get us to go together, and we refused.
Yeah,
John Crux famously said. On television, live during a Phillies game, John Crux said, "If I ever become a vegan, I want you to
shoot me in the face. Or
shoot me in
like
the head.
That. Yeah, that was so something like that. Yeah.
You know, and my question is, like, how many times, like, we've always have to have this boogeyman, and it's like, and I feel like that's kind of what the drug boats are—a boogeyman to get us into Venezuela. Like, we always have these boogeymen, and when are people going to stop buying the boogeyman thing? Like."
Right.
They've been doing this for so long. It's like stop believing. Like the boogeyman's not real. Okay, this is all propaganda. They have a narrative. Don't fall for it. But you still have people that do, and I don't understand. Fool me once, shame on you. Ooh. Fool me twice, you know you can't be fooled again.
Exactly
George W. Exactly. Bush. RGK Cullick says Clayton is a secret Qatarian.
Oh.
Yeah, I've never been, but.
You should see him with his full beard. He definitely looks Qatarian.
Yeah. Yeah, I have his birth certificate, and it's been apostilled. So
I'm from Philadelphia.
He's for sure from Pennsylvania.
Yeah, born in Philadelphia.
Okay.
So sorry about that. Sorry to disappoint you. But hey, like Dan Cohen on the show yesterday, like all that money that's pouring in the United States from India, but there's no coverage of that in the United States. Like,
oh yeah, when are they going to become the bad guy?
I don't know. Probably. Yeah. No, the Zionists, like, they'll figure out something, like, to not. I don't know. That's amazing. All right.
Well, coming up, we're going to talk to you about, embalmers coming forward about COVID shots. You're not going to want to miss this because we have Thomas Haviland on the show. But before we do that, Clayton's going to tell you about our friends at ConnectInvest.
That's right. I will indeed, because right now is the perfect time to figure out how to get your finances in order for the new year. And, you know, I think the thing with people is they're like, oh, I can never invest in real assets. I can only just like get my 401k and do all that, and which is a terrible investment strategy, by the way. The 401k was never meant to stand on its own. It was meant to work in tandem with a pension plan, and pension plans have all but disappeared. So if you want to think about how to invest properly, you need to start investing in real estate. I'm telling you, if you want real tangible assets like gold, silver, and real estate, you are on the proper path, my friends. It's how Natalie and I have done this. I mean, we've done this for many, many years. And the problem is a lot of people think, oh, I could never invest in real estate. It's too expensive. Well, that's where our friends at Connect Invest come in, because you can actually get started investing in real estate short notes for as little as $500. That's right. So you'd be basically like a fund of other individuals just like you who are investing in different apartment projects or single family home projects, etc., all growing their wealth in the same way. And you can start with as little as $500. But the best part is, this is incredible. The best part is, you can choose, like, okay, I want to invest for 6 months, 12 months, 24 months. And, you know, after you get your profits, you can reinvest it, whatever you want. But the best part is that you can earn up to 9% returns just by investing in these real estate short notes. So 9% returns. Exactly. And you can collect that monthly income. Annualized returns up to 9%. No volatility, no drama, just predictable cash flow. And you don't need 50 grand to get started, which is what it takes to invest in a lot of like properties yourself, if you're going to do that yourself. Highly recommend you check them out today. And the best part is, if you go to redacted.inc/invest, sign up today, you get a $50 bonus right in your account. So like Natalie and I just did another round of investing with them ourselves personally. Most of my family has invested this way with Connect Invest. So highly recommend it. Again, you choose the term of the note that you're investing in, 6, 12, 24 months, and you can start with as little as $500 with 9% returns, up to 9% annualized returns. Sign up today and you get a $50 bonus. Just go to redacted.inc/invest. It's a game changer. redacted.inc/invest. Well, the corruption, of course, is off the charts, and it's finally coming to light that the Biden administration, the CDC, hid all of the deaths. Once someone got a COVID shot and died from it, they covered it up. Watch Senator Ron Johnson.
The committee's got now over 8 million pages of information, just in the first tranche, by the way. What we discovered is that CDC, somebody in the Federal Health Agencies, this interagency communication, hid the signal. They admitted there was a signal on myocarditis, and they hid it. Here's data, and I'd like to enter this sheet into the record. I've been publishing this chart for, you know, since really early 2021, when I'm on, for example, talk radio shows, and they talk about this, they get deplatformed, or they were, you know, because all the censorship during the Biden administration. Here's the facts. The Veyer system that was touted in October of 2020, this great safety surveillance system on COVID, a few months later, when they didn't like the results, they started denigrating their own system. But Veyer's shows that there have been 38,742 deaths reported on Veyer's worldwide associated with the COVID vaccine. 38,742. 9,252 of those deaths occurred on the day of vaccination within 1 or 2 days.
That's just the tip of the iceberg. And now more and more embalmers are coming forward to say what we've been covering here on the show for years, that they've seen these white fibrous clots in these cadavers in a way that they've never seen them before. A lot of new information coming to light. Will anyone be prosecuted? I mean, that's the big question at the end of the day. Thomas Havlin, retired Air Force, has really devoted his life in many ways now to getting the message out about these white fibrous clots and these embalmers. He's been doing incredible work around the world to bring this to light. And Thomas is back on the show with us today. Welcome back, Thomas. Great to see you.
Thanks, Clayton, for having me back. And we're talking again about these nasty white fibrous clots that embalmers all over the world have been seeing in their corpses for the last 4 or 5 years, ever since the COVID vaccines came out. And you're right, we had a couple of embalmers just come forward about 5 months ago and talk about it. And we'll be showing a video clip of that in just a minute. Before we go there, though, I'm encouraged that we're starting to slowly see the scientific community talk about problems with the COVID vaccines. You know, a couple of weeks ago during Thanksgiving, that weekend, Dr. Vinay Prasad came out with an internal memo from the FDA saying that indeed the COVID shots have killed at least 10 healthy children. So they admitted that, the FDA did. And recently, there was a couple of papers that came out in October that were kind of interesting, Clayton. And they're showing that people are coming forward, but there's still some cover-up going on. There was a paper done in October, peer-reviewed, came out of South Africa, lead author Dr. Risa Pretorius. And the title of the paper is Circulating Microclots Are Structurally Associated with Neutrophil Extracellular Traps, and Their Amounts Are Elevated in Long COVID Patients. I know that's a mouthful, but what it was a study, and they took a look at 88 patients. They had 38 people that were they considered healthy individuals, and then they had 50 people that they said had long COVID. And they took a look at their microclotting levels. And, you know, I've been tracking the microclotting along with these white fibrous clots. The first stage before you get the white fibrous clots is microclotting. So in this particular study out of South Africa, the 38 healthy individuals had an average number of microclots in their blood of 3,600 microclots per 1 milliliter of blood. Jeez. What was interesting is the long COVID patients, people that were, you know, suffering from shortness of breath, tightness in their chest, unusual fatigue, brain fog, poor vision problems, all these long COVID effects, those and some more serious, they had an average, Clayton, of 71,000 microclots per milliliter of blood. So about 20 times that of the people that were not suffering from long COVID symptoms. However, what the paper failed to state and what was found by epidemiologist Nicholas Halscher, who works with Peter McCullough, was in the back of that paper, there was a table S2, and it said that 83 of the 88 patients in that study were COVID vaccinated. So that was not identified in the front of the paper. So if people read the paper, didn't know that most of those people were vaccinated, they would have incorrectly assumed that all those 50 long COVID patients were suffering exclusively from the COVID virus, not from the COVID vaccine or some combination of. Well, it's so misleading, right?
Right. Misleading, cover up, hiding this information. I mean, you heard Senator Ron Johnson there saying they hid this information. We had the signals. We knew that this was happening. We knew that these things were happening with these shots, and the FDA hid it. The CDC hid it. They hid these signals, whether it was myocarditis or otherwise. And what was your response to seeing like this hearing and specifically talking about like the young children being affected by this? I mean, Because to my mind, if you had even one of these deaths, this thing would have been stopped immediately. But the fact that you had so many and it was hidden, it was all intentional.
It was. In fact, I was at the hearing with Dr. Pierre McCullough, Dr. Jordan Vaughn at that May 25 hearing in front of Senator Ron Johnson. I actually brought the clots with me and showed them to the audience as they were talking about that particular side effect, the white fibrous clots. So it was terrible. But in that same paper that out of South Africa, I actually discovered another flaw that they did. There were four people in that study who were unvaccinated, who were in the long COVID table, who were suffering from long COVID symptoms, which is kind of interesting in and of itself, right?
Right.
But the paper failed to identify which four people those were. They could have put an asterisk next to those people in the table and showed you what their microclotting levels were. I believe the authors left that out intentionally on purpose, Clayton, because my guess is that those four people in that table probably had the lowest microclotting levels, the unvaccinated four. And that would show us a couple of things, right? It would show us that it's actually the COVID vaccines that are the main driver of these large number of microclots. And also that the table is probably incorrectly labeled, right? These long COVID patients are actually long vax patients. They've been injured by the vaccine, right? There was also another paper that came out in October was interesting as well. This one was out of Israel. And they looked at 22 pregnant women. And of the 22, 16 had taken the COVID vaccines, a couple of jabs of Pfizer. And 11 of those 16, Clayton, had mRNA from the vaccine detected in both their blood and their placentas. Some with 25 days after they've taken their last shot, some 250 days after they've taken their last shot. So this is a clear case that now proves the CDC, FDA, Big Pharma was lying to us, right? They said that the shot would stay in your deltoid muscle in your upper arm. Well, now you know it goes everywhere. It goes to the family jewels, right? And we also know that they told us that that shot, the mRNA, would dissipate in 2 days to a week and leave your body. Well, now they're finding it in these patients 250 days after their last injection. But what was really shocking in that paper that came out of Israel is there were six women, Clayton, who were unvaccinated. And they found trace amounts of the mRNA vaccine in three of them.
How?
Shedding. My first suspicion was that their partner, their male partner that got them pregnant, was probably COVID vaccinated. So this is an indication of shedding's happening, right? And this is proof of it. They also looked at four males who had all been COVID vaccinated. All four of them had mRNA from the vaccine in their sperm.
So even if the woman refused to get a vaccine, she refused to get this thing, she ends up hooking up with a guy who's gotten it, she's still showing signs of this mRNA in her body now.
Correct. Now, they did say it was trace amount, so I'm assuming it was less than those women who had directly taken the vaccines, but it's still concerning, right, that any mRNA from the vaccine is getting into somebody who was unvaccinated, a pregnant woman.
I mean, that's why we've seen the rise of, like, I think these dating sites, right, where it's like people want to know, like, have you had the shot? Have you not had the shot? Like, they don't want this. And now there's scientific proof of this. That's crazy. Let's talk about the embalmers. So this is obviously something near and dear to your heart, something you've been watching. And we've been reporting with you here on the show going back years. So, you know, if someone in the chat room is like, this isn't new news, well, the amount, the sheer volume of new embalmers that have come out, because really at the beginning it was one or two of these embalmers being brave enough to come out and saying that they were seeing these white fibrous clots. But as you've been cataloging now, more and more are coming out and reporting on this.
Right. In fact, I got a lucky break about a week or so ago. I came across a YouTube video with two embalmers talking. They're both from Iowa, a Mr. Bob Sinnott and a Mr. Dana Goodell. And they do about a half hour interview. And the last 10 minutes of that interview, they talk about their experience during COVID. And by the way, the name of the podcast is called Life, Death, and Everything in Between. So if people want to look for it on YouTube, they can find it. But we're going to go through, we're going to look at this video. And then we can talk about Mr. Dana Goodell, by the way, is actually a board member of the Iowa Funeral Directors Association. So he's very well respected in the community. So let's watch this video and then we'll talk about it afterwards.
As far as embalming, how do I nicely put this? there has been a large occurrence of interesting clotting factors that embalmers have noticed, including myself. Some of them, things I saw were completely never seen before. I've consulted with other embalmers throughout the country, and we all had the same reaction.
I know during this time I called you because I had the same thing.
White fibrous clots, which is not normal clotting of the blood. Elastic-like, discolored. There's a study being done out of the United States by independent pathologists, and I'm going to be very interested to see their final conclusion on the what they feel like this was caused from.
So, Thomas, that's independent confirmation from both Dana in the video and Bob that they and other embalmers they know are seeing these white fibrous clots. So this isn't just like one embalmer in the UK saying this, right?
Right. And if remember last time I was on your program, I showed a video of the, I was a guest speaker at the Tennessee Funeral Directors Association. And I had video, we showed video of 18 of 28 embalmers in that room raising their hands saying they're seeing the white fibrous clots. So you don't have to believe me. You don't even have to believe those Tennessee embalmers. Believe what Mr. Goodell and Mr. Sinnott are saying as well. They have multiple, you know, independent confirmation now that these white fibrous clots do indeed exist from well-respected men in the community.
So in this, you brought a couple of these clips here. In this second clip here, what are we going to see that Dana tells the story of an individual? Can you explain that?
Yeah, he tells the story of a gentleman who died at home from supposedly COVID, what his wife said. And then the widow asked if Dana has received the death certificate or not. He said, no, I haven't gotten it yet. But when it finally came back, the widow was upset because COVID was not listed as a cause of death on the death certificate because she knew that she would be getting a free $7,500 from the government to help go toward the funeral expenses if COVID showed up on the death certificate. So this is an indication that there's an incentive to falsely misidentify the death as COVID because everybody benefits, right? The hospital gets money if the death is COVID. The surviving family gets money if it, you know, it's coded as COVID. And then obviously the funeral home's happy because they know they're going to get paid by the person because, you know, they get the $7,500. So it shows the fraud that could be going on in misidentifying deaths as COVID when they may be due to the vaccine or something else.
We had a house call at 6 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday morning. And I got the call from fire rescue that this person was deceased on the floor of the house, but he was COVID. And I immediately went, what? You know, if he had COVID, what's he doing home? And but we gowned up, the three of us, and we all went over and, you know, followed the procedures. And I was the lucky guy that got to talk to the family while the others were getting him packaged up to take the funeral home. And I asked him, I said, when did he have COVID? Oh, about 6 weeks ago. Was he doing all right here at home? Yeah, he was doing fine. No problems. Doctor said he was fine. And I went, okay. So we embalmed him, and we had no complications, had a funeral for him, for just family only. Went to the cemetery and buried him. And at the cemetery, the widow asked me, she says, do you have his death certificate yet? And I said, no. It'll be coming from the medical examiner. It'll take a few days for it to get back. And she said, oh. Well, the death certificate came back, acute myocardial infarction. And COVID was never mentioned on the death certificate. The family got very upset because they had heard about the government announcement of if it was COVID-related death, they were going to get $7,500, and all he had to do was produce a death certificate and mention COVID, and they'd get $7,500. They tried to get it changed, and he wouldn't change it.
Wow. And he actually went to the hospital and was diagnosed with COVID at the hospital at one time?
About 6 weeks before his passing.
Wow.
But he tested clean about three weeks before this.
Mm-hmm. You know, and Thomas, my father passed away right during this time in 2021. And, you know, they wouldn't let us go in the hospital, the whole thing. He had a stroke unrelated. I mean, maybe it was related to the I don't exactly know. But they, you know, they wouldn't label it COVID, even though he had COVID. It had nothing to do with. Anyway, it was a whole mess. And so I've seen this in these different hospitals and how they're classifying this. And it's an enormous amount of fraud that had been going on with these.
Yeah, and actually overcounted, right, the number of COVID deaths, because a lot of deaths that were due to other things were actually assigned to COVID because, like I said, it made money for a lot of people.
Right.
Now, in this third section that we're going to take a look at, Bob and Dana, they confirmed that the white fibrous clots are, you know, not just happening, but it's become a taboo subject. They can talk to individual other embalmers about the white fibrous clots and what they think it's caused by. But when they get in large groups like Facebook groups that they have, or when they get in their state funeral director associations and start talking about their annual conventions or in their quarterly newsletters, then it's become a taboo subject. And you'll hear Dana and Bob say sentences like, "Hey, I just stay away from the fireworks," or this gets way too political. So it's an indication that this is a taboo subject. But that's a problem, right, Clayton? Because it means if they don't tell us what's happening, these white fibrous clots are happening, then we, the American public, don't know what's going on, right? Because they're the only ones that see what's going on inside people's veins and arteries.
And so I'm just sitting back. I have some very good friends that are embalmers. One of them is going to be in the Iowa convention next week. And I know it's going to be brought up. And I stay away from the fireworks.
Yeah, well, you know, we both, you know, if you're a funeral director, there's even Facebook groups that we all can be a part of, and we all ask. It's a great thing where you're supposed to be able to ask each other questions.
Right.
You know, but whenever it comes to the COVID stuff, just like everything, it's way too political, and things just take a turn instantly.
It goes south real fast. It really does.
And that's what I also cannot wait for these tests to be done. I didn't realize they were going to be out of the country. They're doing it, but to get the results on that.
We couldn't get a doctor in the United States to test.
No kidding.
Clayton, the last section I think we're going to take a look at, this basically is, again, Bob and Dana confirming that the white fibrous clots are actually still happening here in 2025. And what's interesting is Dana, he's both an embalmer and a funeral director. So he has an opportunity to talk to the families of the deceased. And he says now that whenever he finds the white fibrous clots, he's asking the family, the first question he asks him is, did your family member have COVID, the virus? They say, no. Then he asks them the critical question, did your loved one, the deceased, take the COVID vaccine? He said, oh, yeah. So it's further confirmation that it's the jabs that are causing these white fibrous clots. In fact, Dana has a funny story with his doctor at the very end where he asked his doctor, he says, hey, should I take my latest COVID booster? And the doctor basically says there's a reason we do not give the COVID vaccines at this clinic. So.
Wow. So, and I'm not at all saying.
I'm not either. But yeah, I'm just.
I know. We all saw big clots. And I'm not saying it was from COVID or from the vaccine.
Right.
Because I don't know.
No.
But it was definitely odd during that time. So we.
And we still see them.
Yep. Sure.
And I've kind of gotten a nasty little habit as a funeral director. If I see if I don't embalm the body, but say one of the other directors there does, he says, boy, I pulled a couple of those clots out again. I'll ask the family, well, did mom or dad ever suffer from COVID? No. And then I ask the question, were they vaccinated? Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I let it drop.
Right.
I just let it go.
Yep.
And anytime you mess with mRNA, you're asking for trouble.
Sure.
And that's that. I went to my own personal physician for my Medicare check that I go once a year for. And I was sitting there, and he had COVID. I knew he did. And I said, Bryce, do I need to take a COVID booster? And he looked me in the face. He says, number one, do you want to live or do you want to die? I said, well, I'd kind of like stick around for a while. My life insurance is still good. And he said, there's a reason this clinic does not administer COVID vaccinations. And that was the end of the conversation.
Wow.
So I think he saw the light, shall we say.
Yeah. It's just, here's the thing that kind of shocks me, Clayton. It's wonderful these two gentlemen have come forward here in May of 2025 to talk about this. But where were they 4 years ago when people like Richard Hirschman, John O'Looney, just a few other embalmers were coming out and talking about this? They could have used these two gentlemen to come forward 4 years ago when, you know, this was a serious issue then still, right?
So the question is now, as you mentioned, these embalmers are still finding these white fibrous clots. Are they as dense? Are they as thick? Are they as problematic as they were 3 years ago? Like, if you got the shot a few years ago, has this dissipated? Are they lessened? I'm just curious the severity of these.
Unfortunately, we believe not. Now, I'm in contact with Mr. Richard Hirschman. He's a trade embalmer from Alabama, does over 300 embalmings per year. Richard's still seeing them in about 40% of his corpses. And that's shocking to me because I was hoping that, you know, most people took their last jabs way back in 2021. So you might figure that the percentage of corpses with the clots might be going down now. But they seem to be steady. In my last worldwide survey at the end of 2024, we saw them in about 27% of corpses worldwide in the 301 embalmers that responded. I've been trying to run a 2025 survey right now, Clayton. And unfortunately, last year I had 301 responses. This year so far with the survey out there for about a month already, I only have about 50 responses, Clayton. Hmm. I think the embalmers are starting to believe now that, hey, I've talked about this enough. They may be a little ashamed that they didn't come forward 4 years ago when they should have. So now they don't want to talk about it. And it's become the new normal. So this is what I'm worried about. I'm worried about if we just keep letting this go and go and go, it's going to become the new normal. So I'll get back to you, though, when I get the results of this latest survey. But I'm pretty sure by now that we're probably not going to get the number of responses we got in previous years.
And finally, Thomas, I'll just... You know, are we talking about the new COVID shots, like the ones that they're still pushing on television? You know, you see them during NFL commercials with Travis Kelce telling everyone, John Legend, to like, go get your flu shot and your COVID shot. Like, are these are these as a result of like the newest round of shots, or it doesn't really matter? It doesn't matter if you got it now or a few years ago. It's all the same.
I don't think it matters because they're still using the same what's called DSPC lipid nanoparticle delivery system, and the modified mRNA inside the lipid nanoparticle is still pretty much the same as it was when they first brought out the vaccines 4 years ago. They really haven't made too many changes to it. And as you know, from previous programs I've been on, basically both the spike protein that's produced by the vaccine and that phospholipid nanoparticle that carries the mRNA to the cells from the vaccine are combining with our natural blood clotting protein fibrinogen to cause it to turn into these bizarre rubbery polymers, these white fibrous clots instead.
And as we've had Dr. Peter McCullough on, who's talked about how to go through the like spike protein detox process, we'll have a link to that, those interviews here in the show, so people can check that out if they're curious, because I want to give people a solution. Like, if they've taken this thing, they don't want to wind up on an embalmer's table. The best process about trying to get this removed from your body, right?
You're right, Clayton. In fact, you know, before these things form, they're microclots, like I said first, but before they aggregate into these large white fibrous clots. Now, there was a paper that came out very recently that said that they did an in vitro study, in a petri dish, and they were able, using nattokinase, the natural supplement, to dissolve 84% of the microclots in that petri dish. So that's very promising, right? Hopefully we can do the same in humans. So that means people could take nattokinase before, you know, when they have the microclots, before they become these white fibrous clots. Because once they get to this size, then they have to be physically removed by endovascular specialists in what's called a cath lab using flexible catheters. They have to be physically removed. But the trick is to stop them before they become these white fibrous clots by taking things like nattokinase to break down the microclots.
All right. Thomas Havland, thank you for your incredible work on this, as always. And I think finally the dam is starting to break on this, I'm hoping. But of course, we still see television commercials pushing people to go out and get the COVID shots. And I mean, we've had Dr. Pierre Corey on the show who said these things need to be removed from the shelf immediately. They're that much of a danger. And you have these television commercials still telling people to go get it. It's criminal. I mean, to me, it's criminal at this point. It's been criminal the whole time. But now with so much information out there, how this is still allowed under the FDA is just mind-boggling to me. Thomas, great to have you on the show. Thank you so much for your tireless work on this.
Thank you, Clayton. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And thanks to all of you for watching today. We really appreciate it. Thanks for being a part of our program. We're back live tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So please subscribe. Turn on that little bell notification. You know, YouTube loves to suppress us, of course. But if you turn on that little bell notification, hopefully you receive a notification when we're live. And we'll be back tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. So thanks so much for watching. Have a great night, everyone, and stay safe.
This holiday season, reach for the one butter that never disappoints. Kerrygold. Made with milk from grass-fed cows on Irish family farms, it's rich, creamy, and perfect for baking. Whether browning butter for cookies or crafting the flakiest pie crust, Kerrygold's high butterfat content makes all the difference in flavor and texture. Holiday treats will taste extraordinary.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.